So this morning, the series that we're going to start is all about this idea of atmosphere. We're talking about atmosphere. We're talking about just this whole idea of culture and what it is like in an organization. Now, atmospheres are interesting because really the truth is that you don't notice it unless it becomes noticeable, right? You're driving down the road and you're not thinking, oh, isn't this incredible living on earth and breathing air, right? You're not thinking about that. Until you go past a place where somebody has ran over a skunk, right? Then all of a sudden the atmosphere becomes very, very, very noticeable. And you're like, oh my goodness, right? It's terrible. You don't notice it until it becomes noticeable. That's just the way atmospheres are. That's the way they work. You and I, we just don't notice them. We just don't pay attention to them until something happens that causes us to pay attention to them. That's just the way they work. And so, since we don't normally talk about these things, especially this idea of atmosphere and culture, I wanted to make sure we did that because I want you to make sure that we are going to do something around here very intentional to create that, because you don't notice it until it becomes noticeable, but we actually want it to stick out and actually become noticeable. Now, whether or not you understand this, every organization has an atmosphere. Every single organization has an atmosphere. And you've been in places where it's become noticeable because it was good, and you've been in places where it has been really bad. You've been in restaurants where you've had a good culture, where they try to take care of people, and you've been in a restaurant that just wants your money, right? And it's like, they don't even care if I'm there, okay? I'm just another check-off, you know, person coming in, here's your food, we're done with you. And you've been in places where it really sticks out, okay? So example, okay, this is not to pick on any place in particular, but there is an incredible difference, if you've ever been in there, between McDonald's and Chick-fil-A, right? There's a huge difference. Because at Chick-fil-A, they're trying to do something different. They have a culture that they're trying to create, and there's things they're trying to do there. So it's so different. It's like, wow, they really care if you think, they really care if your food's right, right? Ever been there? You know, like you just get handed this bag and, well, we hope it's right, okay? Where they're actually trying to check it and make sure it's right. Because that's their culture. That's what they're trying to do. And so they put all these systems into place to make sure that they've created a certain type of culture, a certain type of atmosphere. Your workplace has an atmosphere. And some of you, that atmosphere is really good and you enjoy it there. And some of you, you hate your job, right? You're like, oh no, tomorrow's Monday. Because of why? It probably isn't because of the task you're doing. It's probably because of the atmosphere or the culture of the place where you actually work. Most of us, it's not the task. It's not the thing that we're doing at work, okay? We like that. We enjoy that. We're doing that. It's the atmosphere. In other words, it's managers, it's bosses, it's stupid company policies that you don't understand, right? That create this atmosphere that really are causing you not to like your workplace. But it's not your task. It's not the thing that you do every day. It's just all the people that are creating a certain atmosphere. So your workplace has an atmosphere, okay? Every organization has an atmosphere, including churches. Churches all have an atmosphere. They all have a culture in which is there. It's part of it. And what I've discovered, at least what I've noticed over the years, okay, that culture came about by probably three different things. First, it's historical. Most churches are just, they do the same thing year after year after year, decade after decade after decade, right? So they're historical. Historically, this is what they've always done in a church, okay? And you've been there, you've seen it, you can just partake in it. That's their culture. It's historical. They've always been that church. They will always be that church. They will never stop being that church. So some of it's historical. Some of it is just, this is the way we started. This is the way we continue. And historically, this is just kind of the culture that got created. The second one, it gets imported. In other words, you have new people coming in, and they've had different backgrounds. They've had different experiences. They've had different experiences growing up, different experiences in churches. They are used to a different atmosphere. So that sometimes that atmosphere gets imported. You're like, how did this happen? How did we get like this? Oh, because some people imported it into the church. It just took place that way because certain people showed up and that's the way it became. Or number three, and this is my experience, what happens most of the time, it's accidental. It's just what happened, okay? It's just over time and certain decisions and certain things, this is just the way the church is. This is just the way the church has become. This is just the way our church is. And we wouldn't say that anybody planned that, that anybody strategized that. We would just say, it's happened by accident. Just that's just where we ended up. That's where we were going. However, we want to be intentional. We want to be intentional about the culture and atmosphere we want to see created here. Now, over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about things that you'd be like, I don't think we're doing that. No, but we're going to do that, is the point. If the point is, we're not going to stick with what we've always done, and we're not going to stick with the atmosphere that's just always been. We want to create one. We want to see one happen here based on what we believe Scripture talks about as far as what the culture of the church should be like and what it should be like and what the atmosphere should be like and what you sense the church is going to try and going to do, because deep in its core, that's what it is going to be about. That's what I want to talk about. These are different than kind of core values. This is the type of culture we want to create. So that when you think about our church, that these are the things that you're going to think about, because this is what we want to have happen. And again, these might be things that have never happened before. These might be things that people wanted to see happen but didn't. But this is the direction we want to go in. And this is the type of culture we want to create. And so that means it really requires getting everybody on board to say, okay, I'm going to be part of this culture and this atmosphere. Even though we might talk about things that are a little uncomfortable and I don't know how that's going to work, but this is the type of culture we want to create as a church. So I'm going to start with this word this morning, risk. Now, we don't think of this normally as a very positive word, right? Okay? Especially if you're insurance, okay? If you want to minimize risk. You want to lessen risk, okay? And especially if you're a parent, okay? You look at your kids and you want to minimize their risk. You want to minimize the things they do, okay? So, Mom, can I go out and do this? No, no, that's way too risky, right? No, you could fall out of that tree, right? You could shoot your eye out. It's all sorts of stuff you could do, okay? So we're trying always normally to, we think of minimizing risk. We don't think of risk as something positive. And so when you think of stuff risky, some of you are like, oh, okay, so what are we going to start doing? Bungee jumping off the steeple, you know? What are we going to do that's risky, right? Because that's what it sounds like, right? In order to take a risk in our culture, it's something, right? It's something on the edge. And something to make your heart race, okay? Yeah, we're going to have people parachuting in every Sunday, right? Stuff like that. No, no. But that's what we think of when we think of risk. And we normally think, how can we minimize it? How can we lower it? Because with risk comes, right? You might get injured, might get hurt, might cost you more. That's not the type of risk we want to talk about. We want to talk about what I believe historically is part of the early church. It is part of what Paul did, and it's part of what Paul's companions did. And that is that Paul took risks for the sake of the gospel. If it would help advance the gospel, if it would help get the gospel out, he would take that risk. If it meant, hey, another town could hear about Christ, another town could have a church, another city could be reached, more people could hear, he was willing to take those risks in order that that might happen. Now, the story I want to open up this morning is in the book of Philippians. And it's probably a part of Philippians you haven't read, because normally when we think about the book of Philippians, we think about these incredible passages, right? My God will supply all your needs. Passages, you know, that talk about the incredible humility of Christ. Even though he was in the image of God, he didn't think equality with God was something to be grasped. That's chapter 2. There's some incredible things in the book of Philippians. This probably has passed you by, okay? Because it involves a guy we've never heard of, okay? He's really never mentioned, okay, very often at all. And yet here he is, and Paul is going to talk about what he has done for the gospel. And you need to know, this is just a reflection on what Paul does and what Paul believes is so important about getting the gospel out to as many places as possible. So, Philippians chapter 2, if you want to turn there. Philippians chapter 2, begin verse number 25, and you can go to the Bible app, and go to the events page, and you can follow along with all the verses that are there. So here's Paul speaking here, and here's what he says. Meanwhile, I thought I should send Epaphroditus. Right? Ever heard of that name? No, that probably didn't appear in the book to name your kids this year, okay? Epaphroditus, okay? I thought I should send Epaphroditus back to you. He is a true brother, co-worker, and fellow soldier, and he was your messenger to help me in my need, okay? So he introduces this guy. The only reason the Philippians get this letter is because Paul writes it and he hands it to Epaphroditus. And Epaphroditus takes it to his hometown of Philippi, and it's out then. Now they have this letter. They don't have this letter because Paul, you know, mailed it, okay? They have it because he hands it to Epaphroditus, and he goes back to his home area and does it. So do you realize the only reason we have this letter today is because he did what he said he was going to do? That's the only reason we have it. He did what he said he was going to do, and it continued to get distributed around the churches, and we have it today. It's just amazing when you think about that. So Paul writes this letter to these believers in Philippi that this church has started, and they're growing, okay? And he writes this, and so right now he's going to veer off and talk about this guy who's going to deliver this letter. It continues, I am sending him because he has been longing to see you, and he was very distressed that you heard he was ill. So somewhere along the line, Epaphroditus gets ill. He's probably traveling with Paul, gets ill. They hear about in Philippi, and they're really concerned. This is a guy who was there at the beginning stages of the church at Philippi, growing it, helping, serving, and they sent him off to kind of be with Paul, and then they hear he gets ill, and they're just concerned about him. And he writes that in here. Continues. And he certainly was ill. In fact, he almost died. But God had mercy on him and also on me so that I would not have one sorrow after another. He said, yeah, he was really sick. He almost died. He almost died. Out traveling, helping me, serving with me, he almost died. Continues. So I am all the more anxious to send him back to you, for I know you will be glad to see him, and then I will not be so worried about you. I am sending somebody back, he's saying, who's going to help you, who's going to help continue your growth. And when you are when you don't know what to do, and you don't know what the next step is to do, and what Jesus wants you to do, guess what? Epaphroditus is there, and he's going to help you. He is going to help you to know what to do. So I am sending him back to you. Welcome him in the Lord's love and with great joy, and give him the honor that people like him deserve. Isn't that interesting? It says that you welcome him, put honor on him, welcome him back with great joy. You know, throw a party for him, okay? Ticker tape parade, whatever it is, right? Welcome him back as he comes. Why? For he risked his life for the work of Christ. And he was at the point of death while doing for me what you couldn't do from far away. Why are we to mention this guy? Because he risked his very life for the work of Christ so that the gospel might go out. And if that meant traveling with Paul and helping Paul, that's what he was doing. And now he got to go back with this letter. But he wanted them to know. By the way, when he comes back, do you know why you should welcome him? Because he went so far as to risk his own life for the gospel and to get the message that you've enjoyed, that you've welcomed, that has changed your heart and your life. He risked his own life to get that message out. That's just amazing. And we just have a few paragraphs about this guy. And you just read and you're like, wow, he was willing to take a risk. And that risk was all about the gospel and getting the message out and doing whatever needed to be done to get it out. And if that meant, you know what, doing this, I might get killed, then I'm going to do it. And you need to know that this is just consistent, that Paul and his followers, the people who helped him, had a history of taking risks for the gospel. At one point, Paul talks about all the things that happened to him, okay? How people threw rocks at him, thought he was dead, okay? He was shipwrecked. He was thrown in prison. He was flogged or beaten. I mean, he went through so many different things in order to get the gospel out. And ultimately, Paul dies in Rome at the hand of the emperor because he's all about the gospel and the work of Christ. So he took risks constantly because the gospel, according to Paul, was worth taking the risk. It was worth it. So it was worth going to take the risk. It was worth going into different areas to take the risk. It was worth, if it might even cost him his life, taking the risk. Now, we don't think about that, do we? Okay? It's not dangerous for us. Okay? You know, someone's going to find out we're a Christian. We might get thrown in jail. That doesn't happen in the place we live. Now, there's lots of missionaries around the world who are in places where that could happen. So they go in as teachers. They go in as woodworkers. They go in all sorts of different capacities in order to spread the gospel. And they're willing to take that risk. But guess what might happen? It might get found out what they're doing. They might be thrown in jail. They might ultimately lose their life. Okay? They do that. They take that risk. There are places across the world today, places like North Korea, where it is really, 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 really hard to be a Christian. I mean, you could easily be killed for being a Christian in North Korea. It's a nearly impossible country to get in. People have been trying to find ways to get the gospel in there. It's very hard, very difficult. Okay? Even internet into North Korea is highly sanctioned. It's highly filtered. Okay? There, if you're talking to somebody, okay, because I had a friend do this. Talk to somebody who was there in North Korea. There was a whole list of words he couldn't say. Okay? Now, you and I, we don't face that, right? We don't face that. So we normally don't think of this idea of taking risks. We don't think about it, do we? We don't think about what it means to take a risk. Because we're not risking our lives, and it's not dangerous, and it's not difficult. But we still, as I'm going to ask today, that we consider building a culture here that thinks about taking risks for the sake of the gospel. And if we're going to do that, I think there's three things we must consider that I'm going to ask you to think about with me today. That if we're going to take risks, okay, risks for the sake of the gospel, not risks just to be crazy, okay, but risks for the sake of the gospel, I think there's three things we must do. The first one is this, to not allow failure to deflate or deceive us. I think failure can do two things, okay? When you try something, because this happens all the time, right? If you try to do something, well, we don't know how this is going to go. And so we try an event, okay? And it either goes well or it goes terrible and we don't know what to do. If it goes bad, see, the problem isn't if it goes well. If it goes well, we're just like, whoa, we're awesome. Goodness great. We figured it out. We took a risk and it worked. The problem we have is what happens when it doesn't work? What happens when the risk didn't work? What happened when the money spent didn't work, okay? We thought we could reach people this way. It didn't work. What do we do at that point? And there's two things that happens. First, it normally deflates us. We're normally depressed, right? Oh, gosh. It didn't work. This is terrible. We thought it would work. And if we're not careful, that keeps us from taking a risk again. Well, why should we even try? It's too hard. It's too difficult. People are too busy. We just quit, right? So it has a tendency to deflate us. I think failure does something else, especially in the church. I think it has a tendency to deceive us. You know what I mean by that? We take an event, and we have in mind, hey, this event should reach this many people, and it doesn't. And then instead of evaluating and say, maybe this didn't work, we might say, yeah, but one person was reached. And as long as one person was reached, it was worth it. Maybe not. Maybe you should do things that more than one person are reached. And that's what I'm talking about, deceiving. Sometimes we deceive ourselves because one person was reached, maybe we should continue. We thank God for the one person that was reached, and we try to do something that allows us to reach more people. We don't settle for just the one. And we let it deceive us and go, oh, we'll do it again because at least we'll get one. No, there's way too many people who don't know Christ. There's way too many people that don't know Christ to be satisfied with one or two. To be satisfied with little, small percentages because we've allowed failure to deceive us into thinking, well, we tried, at least we reached one or two. No, we shouldn't let it deceive us. We just say, how do we reach even more? Okay? How do we reach even more? But if we don't do that, if we let failure deflate us and deceive us, then we aren't going to take more risk. We'll settle for doing things that are not effective, and will just quit doing things because it's too difficult when they don't work and when they don't come out. Number two, we need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Isn't that a great line? We need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. We work our entire lives, think about this, to be comfortable. More and more and more, everything we get, every part of our lives, we try to make more and more comfortable, okay? If you bought a car recently, you know this, okay? Because now you can get heated seats and cooled seats and massaging seats, and the car will just drive itself. I mean, it's just awesome, right? Because what? We move in that direction. We are people who move in the direction of comfort. We want it nicer, plusher, softer, okay? All of that. Quicker, faster, all of that. So we move in the direction of comfort. So it's hard to take risks because risks are uncomfortable. Risks are always uncomfortable. It's always easier to stay where you are than to risk leaving that and trying something different. So at times what we have to do is we have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. We have to be comfortable. We just be comfortable with, okay, we're going to step out and we're going to try it. Yeah, it's not comfortable. Yeah, we have no idea what might happen. But we're going to be comfortable being uncomfortable. We're going to be comfortable because we're taking a risk. And even though that makes us uncomfortable stepping out and trying something different, we need to be willing to do that. If you always do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always got. But it's safe. And we like to stay there where it's safe and it's comfortable and it's predictable. It's where we all like to stay. All of us are geared that way. I'm just asking if perhaps the church shouldn't be. And we should consider being comfortable with being uncomfortable so that we will take risks for the sake of the gospel. Number three, I think we need to find a new filter other than our personal preference. Okay, because here's what normally happens. When we talk about trying something new, you filter that through whether you like it or not. We all do this, okay? We all do this, okay? You do this when you're watching TV and a commercial comes on, okay? For the new fried egg naked taco at Taco Bell, right? And either you sit there and you go, that looks disgusting. I would never eat that. Or you're like, I love fried eggs. I'm going out, right? Right? And what did you filter that through? Your personal preference, okay? You and I, we are just geared to do this constantly. So this is what happens at church, right? We're going to try something new. And you filter that through, you know, your personal preference. So whether we're talking about, you know, awakening and Sunday school, whether we're talking about church start times, whether we're talking about, you know, almost anything. You and I, we filter that through whether or not we like it or not. And I'm asking, if we're going to take risks, I think we need to find a new filter. I think we need to find a new filter. Not that that's going to be easy, but perhaps the question should be that we should find someone who doesn't go anywhere to church. And we ought to ask them, you know, hey, what time would church work for you? And they might tell us 7 o'clock on Saturday nights, okay? And we'd be like, I don't know what to do with that, right? But that's a different filter than I pass it through my personal preference on whether I like the time or not. It's different. And normally, you and I, we're just geared to this. This is why I do this, what you do. We all do this. We just filter that through whether we like it or not. And I'm asking, if we're going to take risks, risks for the sake of the gospel, I think we need to find a new filter. Or otherwise, we might keep ourselves from taking lots of risks based on the fact that we don't like it. I don't think that's going to work in my family. I don't think that's going to work for me. And we never ask, but would it actually help us reach people who are far from God? So ultimately, here's what I leave you with this morning. We want to be a church that takes risks for the sake of the gospel. That's the kind of culture we want to create. That we're willing to try new things. We are willing to attempt things for the sake of the gospel. Not just to be risky. Not just to be sensational. There's way too many churches doing that. Okay? They're just trying to be sensational and over the top, okay? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about risks for the sake of the gospel. that actually doing it might help us reach into our community. In other words, maybe we'll just say it this way, that we're going to refuse to play it safe while people are going to hell. We're just going to refuse to be safe and comfortable while we know people are going to hell. Because that's what happens when people are disconnected from God, when they are trusting themselves or nobody that their sins would be forgiven. Okay, we know that happens. We know that we're dealing with the ultimate eternal life and eternal death. And we ought to raise the stakes and try some things because we're dealing with people's eternal life and eternal death. That we're going to refuse to play it safe because of that. So, that's the type of culture we want to create. Do we have that right now? No, probably not. Okay? Because, why? We don't like to take risks. It's hard. It's difficult. We want to be comfortable. We want to filter things through whether we like it or not. But would you just join with me this morning in asking God to help us create an atmosphere where we're willing to take risks, not just be sensational, not to be the crazy church in Indianola that tried something wild, but to be the church that simply wants to help people who are far from God to come to God. To lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. So let me pray for us this morning that God would really challenge us, that we would be willing to take risks for the sake of the gospel, and we would allow that atmosphere to be a part of our church, and they will worship him together.